Thank you for your kind introduction. My name is Akira Kawasaki of Peace Belt.
It's
a big topic new approaches to peace building and conflict prevention towards a new era for peace. It's a very lofty title. And as long as I can give my report on the my campaign, I think regardless of what the title of the conference is, I really didn't care before. Professor Isezaki he described a very big challenge, more serious in nature, and in Japan as well, we are one of the peace organizations with the longest history. And when we work in a peace NGO, as Dr. Isezaki has just mentioned, a lot of people say tell us that they're dubious of what we're doing because there's a political coloring to it. So we tend to be labeled. But despite that, we have been persistent in trying to give a positive impact to society. So every day we're suffering. Sometimes we succeed, sometimes we fail, but we have been persistent in our efforts. And we're not easily saying that this is the absolute answer, but we're trying to relate to you the reality of what we're doing. So it's sort of like a report of our activities. I want to present to you the reality of what we're doing and leave the rest up to your judgment. And today, well, in the slides, as you can see, I want to talk a lot about Peace Boat. We borrow a boat and we travel around the globe or go around ports in Asia. We have been doing this for more than two decades. And in order to promote international understanding, transcending borders, and to build confidence, we have a variety of episodes that I can spend hours and hours talking about. But I will not be talking about our peace boat using a boat, but rather based on land, we are undertaking a variety of activities to prevent conflict, and we'd like to introduce you to some of our activities. And in the latter part of my presentation, I'd like to describe to you Article 9 and what we are trying to promote. Can you see the slides? Well, maybe we can dim the slides towards the front of the room. Well, first of all, a global partnership for the prevention of armed conflict. There are a lot of NGOs with similar objectives, but from 2002, GPPAC, we call this GPAC, but this is a global network that was established, and Peace Boat is one member in Asia as a part of GPAC. And GPAC, in 2001, Secretary General Annan issued a report saying the prevention of conflict was important. And on response to this report in the following year in various regions and also looking at various international processes, we have been involved in a variety of activities. We are divided into 15 regions throughout the world. And we looked at conflict prevention in the various areas and the required international processes. So we make proposals on conflict prevention measures in Japan, especially Northeast Asia, because we belong in this area. We think about how to prevent conflicts in Northeast Asia. And in 2005, we borrowed a room in the United Nations University to conduct a Northeast Asia regional conference. And from Northeast Asia, Japan, China, Taiwan, Korea, and also Russia and Mongolia, the representatives of these countries gathered to this meeting room to discuss conflict prevention in Northeast Asia, how this can be implemented as an activity. And now, in our discussions, we discuss a variety of issues, but one of the key words that came out was towards creation of a regional mechanism for peace, especially in Northeast Asia. And Cold War structure and the lack of a regional framework is what I have written down in the notes here. But yesterday and today, we have been talking about conflicts from various corners of the world. And having listened to this, the question I put forth to you living in Japan is that the area that we live in Japan, we belong in Northeast Asia, but in terms of conflicts, what type of region is this? First of all, we are the only region in the world that where we see remnants of Cold War structure in our political system, because we see a divided Korean peninsula, and across the Taiwan Strait, there are two Chinas. So there are military conflicts as well as a trend of arms race still remnant in this area, and an nuclear arms race also is on an upturn in. And Japan, you can live relatively in peace, so maybe you feel that this is not that imminent a real issue, but in terms of a military budget, $1 trillion per annum is being used as military expenditure, and half of that is U.S. military budget. I'm sure that some of you are already aware of all of this, or you may have well imagined it, but in East Asia, including Japan, China, and the Korean Peninsula, the military expenditure in this area constitutes 12% of global military budget. And compared to the Middle East and Southeast Asia, our budget far exceeds them. And we see a growing trend. So as a region, there is more militarization. So this is the salient trend in Northeast Asia. And also in line with this, for example, if we look at Southeast Asia, or if we look at Europe, a peace economic peace framework or mechanism in the region is seen as a trend. But in Northeast Asia, we don't see such a framework developing. We're all going our separate ways. So on a citizenry level, on an individual level, we have to think of a peace mechanism, a regional mechanism for peace in Northeast Asia. That is what we have been proposing. I do not have time to get into the details of this agenda, but a sustainable economy, disarmament. We have four pillars in our regional action agenda. And so these are things that civil society, these within our region, should try to promote. In other words, conflict, division, arms raids are still being promoted by the various states and countries. But in order to counter this on a citizen level, we have to come up with a regional mechanism for peace. We have to become leaders. And some of the challenges in our actions we have been trying to promote. So that those are the process that GPAC is promoting for the building of peace, especially in view of the particular trends in Northeast Asia. So conflict prevention in Africa or conflict prevention in Southeast Asia is quite different from conflict prevention processes in Northeast Asia, which we at Peace Boat in Japan are trying to promote. Now, including Northeast Asia, the NGOs gathered in the UN in 2005, September. We had a global conference, and to Secretary General of the UN, we put forth a world action agenda. And there, we have to move from reaction to action. We have to go to prevention, not reaction, but prevention. So in security, we have to come up with new ideas, and the main players, the protagonists. Well, security issues for the most part was undertaken in priority by the state and the military. The state and the military took care of security, so the people did not have a voice in this. Not that type of format, but it should be the people who come up with the basis for peace. We have to think of conflict prevention rather than just reacting to existing conflict. So within the UN General Assembly as well, representatives of our organization made presentations, and we have been conducting such activities as a trend in Northeast Asia. Well, this is Mount Kumgang in North Korea. This is in the demilitarized zone, ROK, Republic of Korea's companies are developing a tourist location in North Korea, employing North Korean laborers, are inviting visitors from South Korea. So this is a unique exchange between the two Koreas, members of our group gathered there to discuss and came up with various action plans. So these are examples of some of our activities. So this is a picture of Mount Kumgang meetings, and it's mainly the people of the Korean Peninsula reconciliation and unification of the two Koreas can be realized only through such pioneering efforts. So the NGOs would go in projects for the private South Korean companies developed, so they gathered, eating good food, and they enhanced their relationship. The other relationship would be in Mongolia. Civil society version of six-party talks is the title here, but last year, North Korea, since they conducted their nuclear experiments, tension became elevated in this part of the world, and the government and everyone else as well, they wanted to resolve the nuclear issues, the government has been promoting the process of the six-party talks, but the process is very slow. We wanted to have a civil society-based six-party talk, and we gathered in Mongolia. Why Mongolia, you may ask? Mongolia as a country, alone as one country, has obtained nuclear weapon-free status. So on a single country basis alone, they have declared to the UN that they are going to secure their own safety by being nuclear-free. So they are surrounded by Russia to the north and China to the east. So they are sandwiched by big nuclear states, but Mongolia wants to be nuclear-free. Former government officials of Mongolia have now become heads of Mongolian NGOs, civil society members gathered, people from Taiwan and Russia included. They gathered there to talk about a new form of peace on non-nuclear principles. And to the Mongolian government, we ask for their cooperation as well. These are some of the activities that we have been engaged in. And GPAC's activities encompass a variety of activities. This is in Vladivostok. We set a date. September 21st was the Peace Day designated by the UN, so we chose that date to take a peace action in unison. We took photographs and we gathered those photographs. There are various peace activities. The banner in Vladivostok. This congratulates Peace Day, September 21st. And in Mongolia, the students there conducted a seminar on peace issues. Here is a photograph of Taiwan. Taiwan is close to Southeast Asia, so human rights issues in Burma and in the Philippines as well, they took action. And within Taiwan, They are on conflicting relations with mainland China, but they have also other issues domestically with the indigenous native people and the new Taiwanese. There are conflicts, so they are trying to resolve the conflicts through dialogue. And this is in Tokyo. In Tokyo, Lebanese students were invited to discuss Middle East peace issues. There was a candle lighting ceremony, and country not by on a single country issues basis, but rather as citizens of a region, not of one state, but with the goal of thinking about peace as a whole. We wanted to be citizens of a certain region, not of one country, and we gathered to have this event. And it's not just reacting, but we have to be proactive and prevent conflict and think about the role that civil societies can play there. And what is important is the creation of peace through non-force means. In other words, we cannot use force or military might to create peace. And this is where we start talking about Article 9, GPAC, Northeast Asian section. What type of peace mechanism are we going to establish for our area of the world? As you can see here, Article 9 of the Japanese Constitution renounces war and renounces the right to have war potential. And I think the principles there should be a common ground for Asia's peace mechanism going forward. I think this principle can be used going forward. This is what we have been discussing on an Asia level as well as on a United Nations level. We have been discussing the employing of the principles of Article 9. And based on that, this is in Spanish, so I think this is a Costa Rica newspaper, but to newspapers around the world, we are calling out to have the various respective countries adopt similar Article 9 type of principles, and so that our power as civil society is promoting the peace process based on non-use of force. We should start a movement, and Jody Williams, a Nobel laureate, has also been supporting our efforts. And bit by bit, the initial proposals that we had. In other words, when we talk about peace, we are labeled as being politicalized. And Article 4, when we talked about it before, we used to be criticized as being too leftist or too political, but we are now calling out and making appeals to the rest of the world that the principles of Article 9 can be used as common ground for peace-building efforts globally. So we have to transcend single-country borders, and I think the importance of this principle is being discovered on a more global area. So we call this the Article 9 mechanism or the Article 9 approach. But conflict prevention and peace building approaches, in line with the main topic of this symposium, how can conflicts be properly and effectively managed? Under the UN, a prompt and efficient military mechanism such as the PKO may be effective in mitigating conflict, but how can NGOs better link themselves with such efforts? So those discussions are being held on the one hand, but we feel that even before we get into that, on a non-military basis, we as civil societies must bring to the fore as one of the most prevalent issues to think about conflict prevention by the people. This is what we have been asserting, and especially civil societies in Japan must make appeals to the rest of the world. I think we have potential to do this. And based on this line of thinking, we would like to promote our activities. But when we talk about Article 9, people criticize us as being too political, that they're skeptical of our real intent. And up until now, we have not been that effective in making this appeal in Japan, but with other NGOs in Asia, we decided to do something together, and a yellow leaflet was distributed earlier, but we're going to have a Article 9 meeting in Makuhari in May this year. There's an English version of this leaflet. I'm going to leave them here, so I hope someone will distribute them later. And the line of thinking for this meeting is that, as I have described this for the principles of non-military, non-arms forces, we have to base ourselves that on creating a peace mechanism. So more than 100 guests from abroad and more than 10,000 domestic participants. So we'd like to have attend this meeting in May this year. And up until now, we have been quite closed. The constitution scholars in Japan have been involved in a very closed discussion in relation to the self-defense forces. Article 9 has been very contained as a discussion, but now we want to make this more open and open to the rest of the world. A Nobel laureate from North Ireland, an activist, Ms. McGuire, and others will be giving addresses and speeches in this meeting. In the PowerPoint you see here, some of the topics that we will be taking up and some of the participants. This is included in the leaflet, but bit by bit, what we intend to do will become more concrete as we go on with our preparation. So it's not just a mere meeting of academicians, but rather this is a peace festival. We'd like to have a peace walk, a march, and everyone is going to march towards Makuhari, starting their marches from February and eventually get to Makuhari in May. And so I can talk about this forever, but I am running out of time. So one point. Dr. Isezaki put forth various issues for thought, and I would like to ask you to look at this person. His name is Kyuto-kun. His name is Kyuto, Kyuto-kun. He looks a bit vulnerable, a bit weak. He seems to be a bit shy, lacking in confidence, and he holds the number 9, Article 9, but 9 is in rainbow colors. And he's a bit shy, but he is strongly putting forth the number 9 forward. And so through Article 9 of the Japanese Constitution and the image that we have of peace mechanisms in Japan, I think through this picture, rather than me writing 100 essays, I think the image of Kyuto, which Q means 9 in Japanese, but this character putting forth a 9. I'm sure there are going to be a lot of responses and also criticisms, including Japan's past pre-war record. Japan's past history is not beautiful in any means. There are going to be a lot of problems, and this is why Kyuto-kun is a bit shy. But it's not to say that we should disappear. But Article 9, in its principles, is shimmering, it's shining as it lights the way forward. So we'd like to present this to the rest of the world. This is our position, and we'd like to have more people interested in the ideas that we are putting forward, and we hope to have a good discussion during our meeting. So, within this process, just, well, one or two points in summary, and I hope that leads to further discussions later on during the discussion session. First, in terms of theory, Japanese Constitution and the UN Charter, I think we should hold the relationship clear in our head. In the Japanese Constitution, Japan has renounced a war and war potential. I don't have the English version of this, I'm sorry, but the UN Charter also is prohibiting the use of force generally in Article 2. And in Article 26, the UN Charter says that arms should be minimized. And in Section 1 and 2 of Article 9 of the Japanese Constitution, takes the articles in the UN Charter one step forward. In other words, UN Charter is saying that we should prevent war. And in June 1945, the UN Charter was written. And about 6 months later, the Japanese Constitution was drafted. And do you know what happened in between? In October 1945, in August 1945, atomic bombs were dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And UN Charter said that arms should be minimized, but still the atomic bomb was dropped. And it is on based on this background that Article 9 was drafted for the Japanese Constitution. Of course, nothing, not everything has been beautiful and good in terms of the post-war process that we have been going through. But we have to make steps forward, even if each step is a baby step. I think we should put one foot ahead of the other to make steps forward. This is what we are trying to do. And especially to the people in Japan, the last message that I'd like to relay to you is going forward, for us to play a role in a new era of peace going forward. I think our origins as Japanese are in 1945, and I think we should never forget this. In 1945, what we learned as a society, I think there are three big lessons. First is Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the other is Okinawa, and the third is remorse as to what Japan's military did to invade Asia. So the results of war, the results of military, the results of an arms race, we learned our lesson from in history. And Okinawa, if you look at the battles that took place during the war in Okinawa, the military said they were going to protect the people, but actually what happened is that the military killed a lot of civilians. And U.S. bases say that they're going to protect the people, but even right now, the Okinawans are suffering because of the presence of the bases there. So there's a big question mark on whether the military is actually protecting the people. And of course, we have to look back with remorse on Japan's past incursions and invasions into Asia. I think whether the war compensation for the Asian countries has been enough or not, of course, is a different question. But we have been looking back at remorse at Japan's pre-war history. And now we have to do more to contribute to conflict prevention. And to the students in the audience, I'm sure that most of you share my feelings, but we have to go back to our origins. Article 9 is the basis of the Japanese people's aspiration toward peace. In other words, for conflict prevention, some people say that a strong military is necessary, and for the more developed countries of the North, they are stronger so they can properly manage and control the countries of the South. There is a certain scary trend saying this, but despite this, I think we have to further look ahead. We can't talk about old frameworks of military powers and framework, but non-military principles that we learned in 1945 through this Article 9 campaign. This is the main message we'd like to relay to the people. Going back to the issues raised by Dr. Ishizaki, how can we better communicate these ideas? I think that's the gist of the, this session today. I'm sorry I have unilaterally talked and maybe you are getting a little bored and sick of hearing me, but the two speakers to follow me, we are hopeful that certain NGO had certain objectives in mind, but